Is it working now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. In talking with a lot of you, I think you already know these things. Either that or you just, God is putting it on your heart to say to me, to reaffirm what I have to say to you. But if you already know him, then that's fine too. I'm on some pain meds, which I did not take this morning, so I wouldn't be goofy. And so any goofiness that I have today is all me. I can't blame that on anybody else. Okay. We're going to talk about three things today. We're probably not going to get to the third thing, but I have a little surprise for you at the end anyway. We're going to talk about the least, the weak, the least, and the small. Doesn't that sound exciting? I mean, really, the world pushes for the greatest, the biggest, and the most powerful. But we're going to turn this thing upside down and get it right. This is something that I've had to learn the last year or so. Many of you know that Steve and I were part of this congregation for, 20-something years. And he and I have been in the ministry, and we've been very involved in leadership. However, about a year ago, we felt called to leave. And so we did. It was a very, very hard and painful thing to do. But we went to another great church. And we were really nourished and taken care of. And then, about a year later, we felt called to come back. Amen. And we're so happy to be able to be back. Yeah. However, when we came back, I was a year older. And had some health concerns and some challenges, physical challenges, that I didn't have before when I was here. Limited amount of energy, and so don't worry, it's not cancer and it's not contagious. So you don't have to worry about either one of those things, and this is not a port, this is just something. I realized right away when we got back that I couldn't step into the shoes that I had on before, and I felt lost as to what am I supposed to be doing. I can't do the things I did before. I can't really do nighttime, and I can't really do spending the night out. And, there was just a lot of things that I couldn't do, and I felt like I was not at home now that I was home, because there was a new me. And so my abilities had changed, and in some ways my gifts had changed. And when I was feeling left out, I looked around and saw some other people that might be feeling left out. And so what I did is I put on new glasses. These are the same glasses, but I should have Carolyn's cool glasses. But I put on some new glasses to read and study and see things in the Bible that I'd never seen before, that I'd been reading for years and years, but I wanted to learn some new stuff. So I turned to 1 Corinthians 12, because that's about gifts and about the church, about the body of Christ. And wow, I mean, just these new glasses, things just popped out at me like this. And I'm going to just jump around a bit. Verse 4, there are different kinds of spiritual gifts, but the same Spirit is the source of them all. There are different kinds of service. Okay, that helps. But we serve the same Lord. God works in different ways, but it's the same God who works in all of us. A spiritual gift, and this, I want you to take this personally, with your own new glasses. A spiritual gift is given to each of us so we can help each other. To one person, the Spirit gives the ability to give wise advice. To another, the same Spirit gives a message of special knowledge. The same Spirit gives great faith to another. And then he goes on into healing and prophesying. And so that's those other bigger gifts kind of made me miss that there's a gift of just helping others. And then he says, in verse 11, it's the one and only Spirit who distributes all these gifts. He alone decides which gift each person should have. And that's talking about you and me. God decides what your gifts are. And he tailor makes your gifts for you. And sometimes when life changes, he gives you a different gift. But going on down, verse 18, but our bodies have many parts, and God has put each part where he wants it. God has put you where he wants you. And in fact, some parts of the body that seem weakest and least important are actually the ones most necessary. Did you get that? The weakest, the people that we overlook, the people that are on the fringes or that are invisible or that aren't the 10 talent preaching up and doing all these great things are really the most necessary. And so we carefully protect those parts that should not be seen, while the most honorable parts do not require this special care. So God has put the body together such that extra honor and care are given to those that have less dignity. Extra honor and care, that people don't get overlooked, people don't feel like they aren't important, those people. And I don't know, maybe, okay, let's just name some things that might make people feel, you, me, whatever, that they are less important, they are the weaker. If you say it, I'll say it so it'll go on the tape. Okay, somebody's having marriage problems. Are you old? Although I don't want to say old, I always say older, which just means that you're older than you were yesterday, you know, but not old. I know people who are old, Joyce, and you're not one of them. Okay. Right, not well-spoken, not smart, have a disability. Right, when you don't know people, maybe you're shy, or maybe you're a new Christian, and you're not in leadership, you're just a foot soldier in the army of the Lord. You work, you have a job that demands that you can't make it to everything. You have small children, and you don't always get to come to everything. You have crazy, wild children that embarrass you when you bring them to church. Know about that, yes. So there are things that make us feel like we don't fit into the body, but God says that those people require special attention. And he goes on down and he says, verse 28, here are some parts that God has appointed for the church. Well, we got apostles, we got prophets, we got teachers, we got miracle workers, we got healers. Those are the biggies that kind of make us say, well, that's not me. But then those who can help others, right smack dab in the middle of people who are healing and being prophets, is somebody like you and me that can help somebody. I love that. In verse 31, So you should earnestly desire the most helpful gifts. That's what we should earnestly desire, is to be helpful. And so that's the weakest members of us, or maybe when you feel weak, you can help, you can be helpful. What are some other gifts that are not listed here? And I say gifts, we think, oh, this kind of boom from God, but it's really an ability, a talent, something that makes you unique or something that makes other people unique. Oh, the gift of encouragement. Yes. Wow, it's an important gift, encouragement. Being a good listener. Okay. Comfort, yes. Put an arm around somebody and look into their eyes and comfort them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Excellent. Somebody who can see things the way that God sees things. And did I say that right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, very good. Help somebody with maybe that word that helps them make a change. Hospitality. That's. I think Melissa has that one. Uh huh. Empathy. Okay, so that really helps when somebody can relate to what you're going through. Anybody else? I made a list. I couldn't sleep last night. So I made a list.
I was just going
to
say, I think.
Okay. And not all of us have the gift of patience, but if you've got it, use it.
It kind of goes along with the empathy, the gift of vulnerability.
Okay. Yeah. The gift of being vulnerable. And I think you've probably received a little bit of that gift from people. And it makes a big difference. So, you know, I just wrote these down. I couldn't sleep until midnight last night because of this class. But some people are artists, some people are writers, some readers, imagination. I'm a gardener, hospitality, welcoming. Some have the gift of being studious, intellectual, athletic, fitness, elegant, singers, songwriters, song leaders, generosity. Some people have the gift of teaching. Some people are animal lovers, wise advice, help the sick. Some people are handy women that can fix things, kind, loving, gentle, peaceful, sensitive, happy, intuitive, outspoken, adventurous, brave. And then there's homebodies, cooks, compassionate, eloquent. Some people are the idea person. Some people are the follow-through person. You know, I thought about this one, long-suffering. Our older members have suffered long. They've been through a lot. And that's special to have them. Faithful in the hard times, people who think outside the box, problem solvers. This is just what I could come up with. And so none of us should feel like we don't have a gift. Or one, or two, or five, or ten. So, but I would venture to say that there are some of us out here that don't even know what your gift is. You know, if I asked you, you might say, I don't know. That really hurts me. That's sad. That needs to change. How's it going to change? I think, we need to think about it. And saying that you have a gift doesn't mean that you're being prideful or boastful, because thus the name, the gift. It's a gift. You're not, it didn't, so you can say, I've got this gift. I've got lots of gifts. And you're not boasting about it because they're gifts. Very good. Yes, pray for God to reveal. If you can't think of five gifts that you have right now, then pray for God to show them to you. And then what we need to do is tell each other the gifts that we see, that people might not see. Tell me about her. The gift of sweetness. Listen to all those gifts that Linda Rollins has. Plus, she's humble and you just embarrassed her a whole bunch. But let's tell each other. And because we need to know. And we need to be constantly learning what our gifts are and sharing them and using them in the church. Yes, you can. Yeah.
She goes around in church when I would bring her.
Yeah.
And just say hello to everybody. She didn't care if they knew her or not. Mm-hmm. And she just went up to them, hi, how are you? And they'd sort of go back a little bit, and then they would say, I am just fine. You're like that.
Yeah.
And we'd go to the grocery store together. I would take her everywhere.
She did that in the grocery store?
Oh, yes. To everybody. And they loved her, though.
Yes.
I have never seen anybody just say, get away from me, or something like that.
And I think we could have.
She was so bright and encouraging to everybody just to be that way. You know. So.
And I think she would have fallen into the category of being one of the weaker members of the body. But what I want us to see is these weaker members are really the most powerful members. And they're the most needed. They're the most special. So I have to apologize to Cindy because she told me to keep it simple and not, I'm sorry, Cindy. Can't do it. So I have a friend Terry Nida, who is from our time in North Carolina. And she writes a blog called Diary of a Quadriplegic. And I wanted to share it with you because, well, you'll see. On August 18, 2013, I felt suddenly dizzy. It'd been a nice Sunday afternoon. I remember that I was wearing a mauve-colored peasant blouse and white petal pusher pants. I remember that the sun was shining through the dining room windows and my cats were curled up on the couch. It had been a good day because I had spent the day in prayer. I fasted for 8 hours that day, only 8 hours. I had fasted several times before for more than 24 hours on a few occasions and never had a problem. This day was different. I fasted for many reasons. I felt disconnected from God and disconnected from people. I prayed an earnest prayer for God to do whatever he needed to do to help me reconnect with him. You see, about 20 years earlier, I'd been a devoted follower of Christ. I had even picked up my life in North Carolina and moved to Washington, D.C. to be part of a church expansion. I remember my faith soaring at that time, and I was eager to witness to others about Christ. But somewhere along my journey, I became disillusioned by the death of my mother and failed relationships. I became a legalistic Christian and lived a life of drudgery. And I eventually turned myself back over to the world and all its enticing lies about where happiness comes from. So rising up off my knees on that beautiful August day after such an earnest day of prayer left me feeling an incredible resolve. I remember how free I felt. I remember how much lighter I felt. And that's when I decided to break my fast and eat. I simply went to the refrigerator and a sense of dizziness hit me. The next time I opened my eyes, my view of the world, my attitude towards God and people, and the things I treasure most in my life were forever altered. For anyone who's ever fainted, you know something's off because your world begins to shake a bit. Although I'd never experienced an earthquake, imagine the quaking I felt in my body would liken to a tremor. Sometime later, I opened my eyes. My whole body was tingling. Nothing below my shoulders moved, no matter how hard I tried. All I could see was ceiling 5 tiles, and I felt completely disoriented. Somewhere between the refrigerator and the floor, I had fallen backwards, probably hit the stove handle just right to snap the C4 vertebrae in my neck. I knew I was paralyzed. I remember thinking to myself, okay, this is how it is. I was in and out of consciousness for the next day and a half. When I was awake, I spent some time praying and reciting scriptures that I had memorized for challenging life moments, although I never expected a life moment like this one. And please don't think I'm a spiritual giant. I was terrified, and this was all I knew to do. My coworker came the morning of the second day with the police. The door was broken down, and I was found laying on the kitchen floor close to death. Prior to the fall, I had just returned from a vacation in Cancun a few months earlier and had kept up my tan via the tanning bed. My hair was streaked with blonde from being in Mexican sunshine and $200 highlights in the salon. I worked out. I took walks. I'd become athletic most of my life, so I was fit and muscular. I had a closet full of clothes, a bunch of new furniture because I just moved, a new car, many friends, a close-knit family. I seemed to have it all together on the outside, but inside I was groaning. I felt a yearning that could not be satisfied. Unbeknownst to the world, I was at the bottom of a dark spiritual well and didn't know how to climb out, and I wouldn't ask for help. Little did I know, I was getting ready to take a journey with God that would teach me how to claw out of that well, inch by inch. When I woke up in the ICU a few days later, I suddenly had a desperate need for support from friends and family and a relationship with God. Thus, I began my journey of physical, spiritual, and emotional healing. I talked with a dear friend of almost 30 years about healing. She's someone I consider to be a spiritual mentor. She taught me about healing and how it comes to us in different ways. I realized When I was able-bodied, I looked for self-worth through things of this world, and I never felt at peace or complete. Now that I have none of these, I'm completely reliant on God for my peace and sense of completeness. This has been and continues to be a very healing process, and it's only come to me as a result of my accident. Terry Nida is the weakest person I know and the strongest person I know. So the next thing we're going to talk about is the least. We talked about the weak, and that kind of led me into looking at the least. And it kind of led me to thinking about Jesus. I started reading Matthew, and his whole life was about the least. Pick a gospel and start reading it, and you'll just see it. Starting with him being born in a stall, no room in the inn, death threats and murder. He ended his life as a criminal on the cross. And everything in between, it seems like he's just all about the least in our world. And I think that Jesus came to show us God. And when we look at Jesus, we see God. So what we see with our new glasses is that God is also looking at the least. He's inclusive of everybody. God doesn't turn anybody away, and Jesus didn't turn anybody away, but over and over and over, he's reaching out to the least. What did he do in Luke 4, verse 18? The first time we see him reading scripture, he was in the synagogue, and he reads something out of Isaiah 6 that is a message to the poor, the captives, the blind, the oppressed. That was his first reading. He got a chance to read the Bible, and he reads that. And that's what God was thinking about. And then he gets his first recorded sermon in Matthew 6. And we think, okay, here he is. He's going to tell us these glorious things. I just got here from heaven. Let me tell you what heaven is like. Let me tell you about the throne of God. Stuff out of Revelation. Let me tell you about the cherubim. Let me tell you why you should do everything you can to get there, because it is so awesome. It's just, I just came from there. Take it from me. Let's go to heaven. Let's go see God. And he tells the Beatitudes. So we're going to read that, because this is kind of surprising when you think of all the things he could have talked about in this first sermon. He had a big crowd. Matthew 6. God blesses those who are poor and realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted. God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the earth. God blesses those who are hungry and thirsty for justice, for they will be satisfied. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God. God blesses those who work for peace, for they shall be called children of God. And God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right. God blesses you when people mock you and persecute you and say all sorts of evil things about you, because you're going to be in a category with the prophets. So you see what he does? Instead of telling us all about heaven, and he focuses in on our heartbreaks, our personal needs wherever you are. And he gives you a promise. But see, that's the way God is. He He focuses on our weakness, our leastness. And he says, God's going to bless you. And here's how he's going to bless you. He's going to do this for you. And I love that. That's cool, isn't it? Our struggles. God wants to meet you in your struggles and give you a promise. And that's what Jesus is showing us by his life, his sermons. You know, I'm not taken away from the parting of the Red Sea and, you know, feeding 5,000 and the big things. God does do the big things. But then Jesus, he focuses on the small. Like, what are some of the things that you would not expect Jesus, the types of people that you wouldn't expect Jesus to focus on that would be considered the least? Women? A Samaritan woman? A beggar? Children? Lepers? Sick people? Two demon-possessed men who were naked running around cutting themselves in a... I mean, we really would have looked the other way on that one. We would have crossed the other... the lake and gone back. But he goes straight to them. A dead little girl. But what he does is not just that he sees the dead little girl, but he takes her by the hand. The bleeding woman, and not just that she was able to touch his coat and be healed, that wasn't enough for him because he wanted to heal her faith too. He said, you know, who touched me? And he called her out of the crowd. He did more for her than heal this 12 years of hemorrhaging. He increased her faith. The blind men, he didn't just go, thoink, you know. He touched their eyes. He touched the lepers. He looked past these people that were putting these large contributions of money, lots of money, and he noticed this woman who was putting two copper coins. You see what I'm getting at? That he doesn't want to look at the big things. He wants to look at the little things. But we want to look at the big things. So with our new glasses, we're going to look at the small things. We're going to look at the small people. We're going to look at the small needs. We're going to touch people. We're going to reach out to people. We're going to be like Jesus. So he's on his way to heal somebody, and the sick child of a Roman officer, he stops. And he preached these big crowds, but then he would start walking through the crowd and see the individuals in the crowds. I think he preferred the individuals than the big crowds. The big crowds were just an opportunity to find individuals that he could reach out and touch. You know, Matthew the tax collector, he was a crook, an outsider, with the short man that climbed the tree, Danny DeVito guy. He noticed him. He interrupted a funeral, a widow whose only son had died. He interrupted a funeral to help her. What are some other things I'm missing? Because it's just everywhere. Prostitute, yes. The probably naked woman caught in adultery, that they didn't take time to clothe her, just dragged her out. The alabaster jar, yeah. That was one time when he got something fancy used on him. Speaking of not being fancy, when he died, all he had was a cloak. He was homeless. So when we put on these new glasses, we will see things that we never saw before in the Bible, but we will hopefully see things we haven't seen in the church. But we will also hopefully see people all around us that we haven't noticed. Matthew 25, it's the who's going to, the sheep and the goats, and who gets to go to heaven thing. And what does he compliment them for? You can read it. You can cheat and read it. He said, you visited people who are in jail. The least of the other. So there's that least again. That's my second point, actually. What did he gave a cup of cold water. I mean, how much plainer? I mean, it could have been lukewarm water, but it was cold water, a cup of water. And he said, you did that for me. I got a chance. I know if I share this, I'm going to lose my reward in heaven, but I'm going to tell you anyway. We had a delivery for something for Clint's tiny home business. It was like big old truck came late in the day with a refrigerator. And these two guys, this is like 7 o'clock at night. And I said, would you like some water, some ice water? And they said, no, no, no. I said, would you like some lemonade? And this one guy says, yeah, I'd like some lemonade. So I gave him a cup of cold lemonade. And who knows what kind of reward I'm going to get for that? He really liked that lemonade. And he said, this might be made with real lemons. So, you know, little things that we can do. Okay, so he says, I was naked and you clothed me. So how can we can give away clothes. I mean, goodness, the Goodwill could use a good bit of our stuff that we don't wear. We could do that. We could take care of the sick. We could, maybe you're not a nurse and you can't really take care of them, but you can send them a card. You can make a phone call. You can visit somebody in the hospital. He said, you visited me when I was in prison. Well, we've got a prison pen pal ministry. You can write cards to people who, these are things that when we do them, nobody else needs to know about them, but God knows. He notices that. He listed it. The power of a word. Sometimes the things that we say, for good and for bad, stick with people for their whole life. And I'm not going to go into the bad part, but I've had people come up to me and say, you know, back in 1986, you said something to me that I've never forgotten. And of course, I've forgotten it, but they remember it, and they've stuck with it. And so when you say something to somebody at just the right time, you don't know that that's going to, you know, stick with them for their whole life. We had, Steve and I had lunch with a couple that we knew in Gainesville. Just yesterday we had lunch. They live in Florida. And he told me a story that I never knew. But he was visiting Crossroads. This was like 45 years ago. And he said that he had really gotten kind of turned off. He'd been to church a couple of times. And he really just thought they're a bunch of fakers, and he didn't have a good taste in his mouth. So he said, I came to a devotional, and I saw you and my friend Jane standing together, and he thought, he's got tears pouring down his face yesterday. And I thought to myself, these two people are genuine. And I changed my mind about the church. I mean, sure, God could use a bunch of other things after that. But the point I'm making is I didn't even know that. That sometimes somebody's visiting the church and they're like, I don't know, but they see you with a friend and they think, those people are authentic. That relationship, he was crying. This is a world traveler teacher over at Northview Church right now. And I'm like crying because I didn't know that had touched him. And so, okay. I keep looking at my watch. It doesn't mean a thing. So, the least. So, Jesus says, look at the birds. Look at the birds. That's a command, actually. Thou shalt not kill. Look at the birds. And look at the sparrow. I mean, could he pick a plainer bird? Yes. I mean, I love birds. What's a plainer bird than a sparrow? Nothing. I mean, the chickadee is small, but he's got a cute little black hat, and I love him. But the sparrow is just a little brown bird that he picked that sparrow. Why did he do that? Look at the sparrow. He could have picked a bluebird, a blue jay, a hummingbird, a cardinal, an eagle, but he didn't. Why did he pick the why did he pick the least? So you're telling me that there's a lesson behind why he picked that bird. And that's exactly it. There's lessons behind why he picked the sparrow, the bird. But then he goes on, he says, well, let's see if you can get this lesson. What about the wildflower? Look at the flower. Look at the wildflower. Don't look at the bird of paradise and don't look at the bromeliad and the orchid. Just walk out in your backyard and find this teeny little yellow flower that's just probably just got 5 petals. Why did he do that? Okay. It's easy. Yeah, and that's good. There's a life lesson there about being, you know, an easy life. Okay, you're learning a lesson from the wildflower. This is weird. Okay.
Well, to me, what he's doing is like, look at the bird, look at the sparrow, look at the wildflower. Jesus is lifting them up, but yet they're the ordinary beasts.
Oh, okay. Very true. Are you seeing things? Are you hearing things? Okay. Yeah. Right. Right. Well, this is so true, what you're saying, and there's lots of things that we can learn, but you're missing the one that he actually did explain. Yeah. I've got one at home that's growing out of the concrete, and it's a weed, but I don't want to pull it because every time I walk by, it's, okay, look at you growing out of that. I can do things that I don't. You going somewhere? Oh. I thought maybe I made you mad or something. But you guys are not even... Okay, I love what you're doing because you're doing my next point, but I love what you're doing, and I want to get to the lessons, the hidden lessons, but you're not even reading the passage. What did he say?
If I take care of those, how much more will I take care of you? If I notice those, how much more?
Yes.
As a human who I've created in my image, will I love and take care of you?
That's the message, the one that he gave us. But there's that, yeah, look at the bird. Look at him out there eating and pecking around. And I know that I put that food out there, but that's still okay, that God used me to feed them. But he's saying, how much more am I going to take, look at the bird and learn that I'm going to take care of you? And look at the flower and learn... What did he say about that? Yeah, don't worry about what you're going to wear. I was really going to dress up today, but then I changed my mind because it would be against the lesson. So this is me casual. I know, I got some flowers on me. But you're sweet. Everybody's giving me the gift of encouragement. But what he's saying is, don't worry about your clothes. When you see, because even Solomon in all his glory was not dressed like one of these. So he gives us this if-then principle, that when you put on your new glasses and you read, you think, if God does that with blank, then will he not so much more do this? So in Psalm 19, the heavens are declaring the handiwork, and God is speaking to us through these small things. And we're not, first of all, we don't see them, the wildflower and the sparrow. And even if we saw them, we haven't been learning the lesson from them. And even if we were learning one lesson, we haven't been learning more lessons from them. So that's the title of the next lesson. I don't know why I'm looking at my watch, but the next lesson. Oh, I saw this sign on the way over here, down by the park. Big orange sign, lost. You know, I hate to see those signs. But it caught my eye, $1,000 reward for a cat. I know, and I love cats, but I was surprised that it was a cat, to be honest with you. $1,000. And I thought, that's because those people love that cat. You love a cat $1,000 worth. I don't know. My point is that we are like the $1,000 reward for something small. So here's what I'm doing. I'm starting a blog. Okay. Never done that before. And the last part of the lesson is going to be on the small. And so what I need for you to do is see something small and post the lesson that you got from it. Oh, thanks, Dora. So I'm not really going to say a lot on the blog. I'm just going to listen to what you see. And I want you to know that you're going to see things and learn lessons that are going to, from God. I mean, have you ever had a breeze blow on your face when you just really needed it? Melissa calls those zephyrs. Have you ever had a zephyr? The dictionary and Melissa calls them zephyrs. But you don't just go, hey, that's a nice breeze. I needed it. You think, what do you think? Thank you, God, for sending that breeze to me. And I know this sounds really weird and strange, but I'm weird and strange. But you can learn so many things. there's these messages coming to us all the time, these messages that say, I see you, I know where you are, I know what you're thinking, I know that you're thirsty, I know that you're feeling like you can't make it. Oh, the hummingbird. Lessons from the hummingbird. That hummingbird's got to go where? Jamaica or somewhere? Where does a hummingbird go after it? Y'all don't know this? Well, it goes across the ocean. This little tiny bird that flits around is getting enough. Research it for me, will you? But he's got to go somewhere across the ocean to get to where he goes. And that teaches me, well, if the hummingbird can do that, then I can do what I need to do that seems impossible. So this new blog is, the blog is called New Glasses. And you need to, for now it's a closed group. I mean, it will change. But you need to have, I need to invite you to be on, you know, member, whatever. Kathy, what's that called? So, see these fancy little things for you to put your name and email address if you want to be on the blog. And who in the world? I told it to... Oh, my neighbor. I told it to get on Do Not Disturb, but it's not listening. My neighbor, I hope my house is not on fire. There you go. You didn't know that about the hummingbird. This little thing, 500 miles across the Gulf, nonstop. No. Okay, the if-then principle is, if the hummingbird can do that, then you can do what you need to do. If-then. So, okay, sign up for the blog, and thank you for being here. Oh, Rebecca, you had a comment? I'm sorry. It was a long time ago. Okay, thank you, and thank you to everybody for coming. Did I go too long?
No.